Chapter 4. Captain Ottavio Scarandum took his current command, the ECO cruiser, well, that escalated quickly, through the Elder wormhole and tapped a claw on the side of his command couch, while waiting out the necessary but annoying delay for the starship sensors to recover from the spatial distortion. He was still Captain Scarandum, a fact he had to remind his crew about, despite the widespread rumors that he had been selected for admiral. Wagering was so heavily in favor of his promotion that he was tempted to bet against his rise to fleet officer, and then commit some act so flagrantly incompetent the promotions board would have to reconsider. Unfortunately, doing something like that, even though it would totally be in keeping with ECO's well-established culture, would prompt a visit from an inquisitor, and just the thought of that made him shudder. So he kept his mouth shut and focused his energy on doing his job, which currently involved a mysterious rendezvous with the 16th Sustainment Fleet battlecruiser, A World of Hurt, headed your way. The meeting with the unfamiliar warship was mysterious, both because it had diverted him away from a carefully planned mission to screw with the Esselgin, and because he couldn't think of a reason why anyone from the 16th Sustainment Fleet would need to interface with the Ethics and Compliance Office. The World of Hurt was a relatively new battlecruiser, the first of its class, and Scarandum had heard the ship mostly was assigned to the mundane task of showing the flag around far-flung parts of Jarapha territory while the engineers tried to work out the numerous bugs that had plagued it since it left the shipyard. Unless the glitches that kept the World of Hurt from taking a place in a frontline unit might be a cover story as an excuse for a capital ship being sent to places that normally would not be visited by such a powerful fleet asset. As that thought occurred to him, Scarandum made a mental note to check what sort of action Central Wagering had about the activities of the World of Hurt specifically, and perhaps the 16th Sustainment Fleet in general. If the 16th was up to something sketchy, well, that was a problem. Activities that bordered on the verge of being unethical were supposed to be conducted by the ECO. It was right in the office's name. The status indicators on the main display were showing sensors resetting as expected, and he stifled a yawn, regretting his decision not to let the well-that-escalated-quickly's executive officer take the command couch for the wormhole transition. There just wasn't much for anyone to do while alarms blared, and the cruiser shuddered from being too close to a spatial distortion. In the blink of an eye, the full suite of the ship's sensors were not needed to detect and identify the threat. He could have identified the problem simply by looking out a window because it was right there in front of his ship. Maxalt's warships. Three of them. Big ships. Heavy cruisers, at least. "Stand down, stand down," he waved to his pilots, knowing the senior species could pound his ship to scrap before the escalated could form a jump field. "If they wanted to shoot, we'd be dead already." "Well, shit," he added quietly. "What, sir?" Kinsta asked from his console. While Scarandum moved from ship to ship as needed, he brought a small group of core staff with him, including his trusted and a bit too trusting aide. "That solves the mystery of why we were ordered to rendezvous with the World of Hurt. The message was a fake, to lure us here." "Damn it!" Kinsta groaned, and his captain knew the lieutenant was more upset by losing a wager than about being trapped by the three senior species warships. Hitting the button to release the safety straps of his couch, Scarandum stood up and turned to the ship's executive officer. "Warm up the ready bird, please. The ship is yours." "Sir?" The exo's antennas twitched. "Where are you going?" The captain pointed to the menacing enemy ships on the display. "Whatever they want to talk about, I assume they want it to be a private conversation." He was right. The Maxalts did want to discuss something face-to-face. The formal request came before he left the Escalated's bridge. To his surprise, his welcome aboard the enemy ship was not accompanied by the usual threats. The Maxalts were, as usual, angry, arrogant, and disdainful. But based on his admittedly limited dealings with the beings who led the enemy coalition, there was something different about this particular group. They were a bit less arrogant, and perhaps a bit more angry. And maybe he sensed something else also. Hesitation. Uncertainty. Fear. He could see it in their eyes, The long training sessions about alien body language had not been a waste after all. It surprised him that he could sense fear at all. The Maxalts were well known to have implants that allowed direct control of their hormones and autonomic responses. If they felt fear, it must be at a level they were not equipped to cope with. Or the haughty leaders of the hegemony were simply not accustomed to experiencing real, actual fear. So, Scorandum's mind flashed through an interesting thought while he was escorted out of the docking bay by four guards who were wearing full combat armor, as if he could pose any sort of threat. His thought was, the unusual action by the Maxalks must have been prompted by the humans temporarily crashing part of the wormhole network. He couldn't think of anything else that could frighten the senior species, not even the impressive-sounding strategy of mutual assured destruction. By relying on such a strategy, the humans exposed themselves as rank amateurs in the power politics that had been in effect across the galaxy since before anyone could remember. Ultimately, the threat to use elder weapons was an empty gesture. If the humans wanted his advice, it would be simple. A threat to use a gun is useless if it's pointed at your own head. But the humans hadn't asked him. And still, they had run circles around the senior species, pulling off sketchy operations that he could only dream about. So maybe they didn't need his advice. The ability to shut down even part of the ancient wormhole network? That was power. He had to respect that. The armor-suited guards, two in front and two behind, guided him into what looked like an interrogation chamber. On one end of the compartment was a single piece of furniture. Its surface flowed like liquid and reshaped itself into a couch when he stepped through the doorway. The couch froze into a configuration appropriate for Jarapta anatomy. The couch did not have visible restraints. He would not willingly suffer that indignity. He chose to stand as the guards withdrew from the compartment and the door slid closed with an ominously heavy thunk sound. Utavio Scorandum waited quietly, keeping a neutral expression on his face. No doubt the enemy was observing him. Their scanners could measure his heart rate and stress hormone levels. The nanoscale sensors embedded in his own body should warn him if the enemy attempted to infiltrate him with their own hostile nanomachines, but that assumed the senior species technology was unable to elude detection. That was a bet he did not want to take. When, if he was allowed to go back aboard his ship, he would need to endure a thorough and rather uncomfortable decontamination procedure to prevent. The solid wall on the other end of the compartment suddenly disappeared, and he was staring at three Maxalks seated behind a sleek table. The table made him curious. What was its purpose? Did the Maxalks use it to hold beverages during long interrogations? Certainly they had no need for a table to hold any sort of electronic devices. They could control the entire ship through their sophisticated implants. Most likely, the table was there as a psychological barrier between interrogators and prisoner. It was not needed as a physical barrier. The wall that disappeared had not gone away. It had simply been tuned to be transparent. He could see a very faint shimmering around the edges. The Maxalks stared at him, unblinking, impassive. The silence continued until it became uncomfortable. Scorandum knew that was an interrogation technique and he should wait for the enemy to tell him why they had brought him aboard. But he was more than a bit pissed off about having his day so rudely interrupted, and mostly he was simply bored. Cheap techniques like making him wait should be beneath the dignity of the senior species and were certainly a waste of his time. Listen, he cocked his head, knowing the Maxalts would certainly understand the body language of his people. If this is about the incident at Funandeng, I will not offer an apology. The Bosphorok have no one to blame but themselves. The alien in the center chuckled softly. That was unexpected. Scorandum blinked, his antennas drooping. Before he could respond, the Maxalts leaned forward, resting her forearms on the table.
The Bosphorok are fools. Weak fools.
Their weakness, Scorandum spoke slowly, trying to understand what was happening, makes your coalition look weak.
No. Failure makes our coalition appear weak, she explained with a fierce scowl.
Then she leaned back in her chair, and a smile unexpectedly flitted across her face.
We wish to express our gratitude for your assistance, unintended though it was.
Excuse me?
The Basfarak know their failure has greatly displeased us. That will make them more compliant in the future. We, therefore, will not need to devote resources to enforcing their continued compliance.
Well, shit, Scarandum said to himself. That's not what we intended. The Maxulks, who had not given her name but wore the uniform of a fleet captain, continued before he could speak.
Our gratitude is, of course, not sincere. Our admiration is.
Scarandum did not like being at a loss for words. It was happening too frequently.
Your organization has always been troublesome to us.
The alien's brief smile was entirely gone.
Recently, your ethics and compliance office has proven to be a model for clandestine operations. Your inventiveness, focus, and sheer ruthlessness are impressive. We only wish our own special operations group was as successful.
They don't need to be, the ECO captain found himself saying, wondering why he was offering unsolicited advice to the enemy. His statement hung in the air awkwardly. I meant that, he added. Your people are supremely powerful. You have no need for clandestine operations against anyone other than the Rindaloo, and you can't operate against your peers without serious consequences.
Your people routinely conduct operations against your peer enemies.
We have the Rindaloo to protect us from serious consequences. The three Maxulks subtly shifted their heads toward each other. Scarandum knew that was an indication they were conversing through their cranial implants.
That may be true, the one in the center conceded. However, it would be useful for us to have a client who is skilled in secret operations. Perhaps you and your colleagues would consider changing your allegiance for the right inducement.
Again, Utavio was at a complete loss for words. The Maxulks had brought him aboard their ship for a job interview? That could not be true. It was not possible. Or, he had recently learned that many things he thought impossible were in fact possible. My people are committed to the Rindaloo Coalition. It is not
the Kristang serve us.
The Maxulks leaned forward onto the table again.
Yet some Kristang, those who call themselves the Verdkris, have allied themselves with the humans. Do not tell us that there is no one who plays both sides in this war.
Yes. Well, he said carefully, wary of angering the creatures who held the power of life and death over him. We are happy with our current circumstances. Also, my employer takes a dim view of freelancing, he added, in case the aliens were making an offer to him directly. The Maxulks in the center smiled, flashing her fangs.
No matter. We would not trust you anyway.
If I was trustworthy, I wouldn't be very good at my job, he muttered.
True.
Another smile.
But we did not bring you here to discuss an ongoing arrangement. What we propose is a one-time joint operation.
Joint operation, he repeated slowly, to give his mind time to process the idea. Against the Rindaloo? Why would we—
Not against your patrons. Our operation is aimed at the humans. To answer your second question, why would you agree to work with us even in a limited fashion? The answer is simple. For the benefit of the Jarraptha people, and in particular, the Ethics and Compliance Office would benefit.
Scarandum prided himself at being able to guess an opponent's next move. It was humiliating to admit he had no idea what the Maxulks were planning. The Maxulks stared at him expectantly.
Are you willing to listen to our proposal?
The day was full of first-time experiences. The ultimate enemy of his people were politely requesting a favor. Or, he considered the solid walls all around him. At least they were giving the appearance of being polite. He had to give them points for making the effort. "First, as you are holding me in this," his antennas twitched and swung in a circle, "detention cell, or whatever it is, I can hardly refuse. And second, you have me intrigued. Please, continue."
"The goal of our operation is to capture the Skippy entity. Your part will be to lure Valkyrie or any ship carrying the target entity to a rendezvous."
Finally, the enemy inviting him for a chat was beginning to make sense. "A rendezvous or an ambush?"
"It is the same."
She waved a hand in a dismissive gesture. He noted that her claws were retracted. She was relaxed rather than agitated. That was good for his health. Also, it would probably not be good for his health to mention that the Maxalks, according to rumor, had already tried once to capture Skippy. Tried and failed. No one liked to be reminded of their failures. The senior species were no different from those lower on the technology scale. "I have questions," he said after a moment.
"Of course."
"First question, then. Why do you need me?"
"Because Bishop learns from his mistakes. He jumped his ship into a rendezvous based on a message we faked. To lure his ship into another ambush, we need someone he trusts to assure him the situation is safe."
Scarandum tilted his head. "I think you overestimate how much Bishop trusts me."
"The human commander trusts you enough for our purposes."
He considered that for a moment. Maybe the Maxalk's fleet captain was right. Bishop was leery of ECO causing trouble for him through operations the humans didn't know about. But there was no reason for the leader of the Merry Band of Pirates to think the Girapta would actively betray him. As he thought about it, he realized the Maxalks had selected the perfect candidate. If Bishop suspected anything sketchy about the rendezvous, he would assume it was just ECO standard operating procedure. "I don't know about that." He shook his head. "Since my ass will be hanging out to dry if Bishop doesn't take the bait, I need to be damned sure you don't screw the deal by one of your ships suffering a stealth field glitch."
"We will handle our end of the operation," she said, with a faint glimmer in her eyes.
The conversation had shifted from what to how, and that was good for her. "Let's move on to the second question, the important question. You are already one of the two most powerful societies in the galaxy." He decided not to include humans on the list of apex species, figuring that would do nothing but irritate his captors. "With control of the Skippy entity, your power would be supreme. No one could challenge you. Why should my people help you to dominate the galaxy?"
"Because sadly that will not happen."
"I am confused."
"We have determined that it is not possible for anyone to control the entity. Even among the humans, the entity cooperates with only a select few, a few the entity has chosen to assist. It cannot be forced or persuaded to act in any particular way."
"Then," he stalled for time while gears turned in his mind. Perhaps it was useless to try to guess what the Maxalks intended. "If you can't use the Skippy AI, why capture it?"
"Oh. You see now?"
"Maybe. You seek to prevent the humans from using the entity's power."
"Correct. Without the assistance of an elder AI, humans are inventive and clever, but ultimately also primitive, and no more than an annoyance to us."
There is also the problem of the elder weapons controlled by the humans.
We believe the entity will cooperate in one way. Continuing to prevent those terrible weapons from activating. It will seek to protect its pet humans in any way it can, even if it refuses to help other species. Captain Scarandum, a moment ago, you were displeased by the notion of my people possessing unchecked power if we acquired and were able to utilize the Elder Entity.
He would describe the situation in stronger language than mere displeasure, but he blamed that on the alien translation software. That would not be an optimal outcome, no. He cringed at the use of buzzwords. When had phrases from personnel training courses crept into his vocabulary? That was not a good sign.
Then tell me, why have you been assisting the humans?
Well, that... First, I follow orders, and...
I should have asked, why has your government been assisting the humans?
As a check on your power, Scarandum found himself speaking the blunt truth, which made him wonder whether he had been drugged. Some chemical in the air, and the power of the Rindaloo. The two of you have wielded power for too long to no one's benefit. It is no secret that the Maxulk's hegemony's ultimate goal is to attain supreme power and enslave all others.
Yet you somehow believe the humans would be better if they became the supreme power in this galaxy? Come, Captain. Surely you're not so naive. Perhaps for the near future, the humans might be benign actors, allowing others to pursue their destinies. How long do you expect that to continue? Whether it takes 100 years or 1,000, humans with unchecked power will use that power for the benefit of no one but themselves. It is inevitable. You know that. If we were to capture the Skippy entity, the strategic situation in the galaxy can go back to where it was, where it should be. Elder weapons would be possessed by a few and used by none. The war would continue, yes, but there would be balance. Currently, the Jarraptha enjoy a privileged position in your coalition, for you have been successful and are useful to your patrons. Where will you be when the humans rule the galaxy and have no use for troublesome insects?
Scarandum knew that insects was a translation of what the Maxulks actually said. He also knew she intended the word as an insult. The humans might find us useful.
They might find you to be useful. They also might not. Either way, the fate of your people will not be under your control.
Your concern for the welfare of my people is surprising, he said, hoping the ship's translator would not understand that instead of surprising, he meant insulting nonsense.
We're not concerned about your people. Our concern is driven entirely by self-interest. We suggest you do the same.
There was a pause when the three aliens nodded their heads in unison, speaking silently through their implants.
Captain Scarandum, we propose to deal with the problem while we still can, before it is too late for anyone to act. The power of the humans must be checked now, before it grows out of control.
He tilted his head down toward the deck while he considered how to respond. Looking the Maxulks straight in the eye, he said, "What's in it for us?" The senior species leader laughed softly.
Now we come to the heart of the matter. Bargaining. We are offering 4 of our frontline warships to you, including spare parts and consumables for 5 years of operation.
What type of ships?
Terror-class heavy cruisers.
No. Scarandum shook his head. Never agree to the first offer, he reminded himself. We need something more useful. Extinction-class battlecruisers, 20 of them, with spares and consumables for 10 years.
Unacceptable.
Fleet Captain, we need 20 ships, so we can have 8 ships available at any time. We need your most powerful type of battlecruiser to protect us from potential retaliation by Valkyrie, and to offer us a measure of protection from you.
Unacceptable.
We don't have a deal until we have a deal. The ECO captain insisted. You want me to sell this operation to my leadership? To the home fleet? I need something solid. Something worth the risk of retaliation by the humans if your ambush fails. The way your first attempt to capture the Skippy entity failed. He paused, taking a breath, seeing angry scowls from all three of the aliens.
You need to give us...
He looked from left to right, then back to the Maxalks in the center.
An offer we can't refuse.
More head bobbing, eyes twitching, and shifting side to side as his opponents conversed amongst themselves and possibly with others outside the compartment. Abruptly, the fleet captain stated,
14 ships, 6 Extinction-class battlecruisers, and 8 Terror cruisers, plus spares.
Scarandum shook his head slowly. 18 of the Extinction class. Surely you can see that having all the ships of the same type makes maintenance and support a more practical matter for us. The reply was an impassive stare, so he tried again.
You risk little or nothing in this joint endeavor. If you fail again, he emphasized, your relationship with the humans will not be substantially altered. Failure could be disastrous for us. 18 warships of the Extinction class, she agreed with a touch of weariness in her voice.
The Maxalks did not enjoy haggling. It was not part of their culture. Plus spares and consumable items.
As you mentioned, yes.
Plus, he stood up straighter, you must remove or disable the master AI of those ships. We know the reputation of your warship AIs. Her scowl returned.
Disabling a warship AI will be difficult.
Difficult for you, impossible for us. The haggling went on for an indeterminate amount of time, or a time Scarandum was not able to determine. He was by then certain the Maxalks had drugged him. A mild dose. Maybe they were only adjusting his natural hormone levels to put him at ease and make him more willing to cooperate. Regardless, whatever they were doing, it was against his will. He found that he did not care much about that, a sure sign that he was not himself. The haggling went on because Scarandum was curious to see how far he could push the powerful enemy, and because he was resolved not to be cooperative despite the drugs making him want to be friendly and reasonable. Also, because he simply enjoyed the process of striking a bargain, but mostly because he could see that dragging out the haggling was making the Maxalks exasperated. When his captors escorted him back to the docking bay, they had not only the framework of an agreement, all the important details had also been hammered out. The Maxalks would deliver 18 of their frontline Extinction-class battlecruisers, plus a stores ship crammed full of spare parts and those items that wore out from use, like railgun magnets and the inducers that created the virtual jump drive coils. The ships would be handed over up front, before Scarandum lured Valkyrie to a fateful and likely fatal rendezvous. The Jarraptha would have time to thoroughly inspect the newest additions to the home fleet and to install their own master control AIs aboard each ship. Both sides agreed that any further negotiations would take place face-to-face only, and that whatever discussions occurred within Jarraptha leadership, they would be conducted without use of electronic communications and without any record of the conversations. The last condition was an absolute, and Scarandum knew he would have agreed even without the gentle nudging of whatever unwanted chemicals were in his bloodstream. With Skippy apparently able to infiltrate any electronic form of communication, conspirators had to fall back on doing things the truly old-fashioned way. Although the term old-fashioned might not apply to negotiators who flew across the galaxy faster than light. Back aboard the well that escalated quickly, Ottavio Scarandum instructed his crew to jump away as soon as the enemy damping field strength fell to a safe level. With Lieutenant Kinsta by his side, worriedly scanning him with a medical monitor, he went straight to the ship's sickbay for a painfully thorough checkup. The Escalated completed 3 random jumps by the time the medical AI diagnosed his condition. He had been dosed with a very subtle mood-altering chemical that was most likely an airborne substance. An antidote was administered, though the best remedy was simply to rest while his body naturally cleansed itself. Leaving the ship to his capable crew, he went to his cabin and immediately fell into a sound sleep. When he woke, after blissfully uninterrupted slumber, Ottavio Scarandum was feeling good. Suspiciously good, so he went back to sickbay for a quick scan, which assured him his hormone levels were completely normal and no mood-altering substances were in his bloodstream. Knowing that whatever decision he made would be entirely his, he checked in with the bridge crew. The ship was drifting in interstellar space, with no known threats and no concerns about the condition of any system. The crew and Master AI had completed an exhaustive scan of the ship's structure for contamination. The dropship he had used to travel to and from the Maxulk's warship had been discarded, and that docking bay sealed off. Both pilots who accompanied him to the enemy ship were declared clean. They had not been subjected to mood-altering drugs, and no nanoscale spy devices had been found on or in them or their clothing. "Sir?" Lieutenant Kinsta was waiting with a hot beverage when Scarandum arrived at his office. "None for me, thank you." Scarandum shook his head. Kinsta set the mug down, disappointed and concerned. "Are you unwell?"
"I am feeling great," the captain said truthfully.
"I will get food later. Right now I need to think." "Is there anything I can do?" Scarandum knew his aide was burning with curiosity to know what the Maxulks had wanted to discuss. The lieutenant was a trusted confidant, but the proposed operation was too sensitive to be discussed with anyone other than Scarandum's superiors at ECO, and then only with a very select group of very senior officers and the very highest level of government.
"Don't worry about me, Kinsta. I will join you in the galley later."
He looked toward the door. Kinsta took the hint and withdrew with a curt nod, pressing a button to slide the door closed behind him. For a moment, Scarandum contemplated the bottle of very fine vintage Bergoge in his desk drawer. No, he needed a clear head to think. At the time, the proposal offered by the leaders of the enemy coalition sounded like a good deal. A very good deal. 18 frontline battlecruisers. The core of a powerful fleet. Actual warships to bolster the strength of the home fleet. By contrast, the humans had offered only vague promises of technology transfers and unspecified upgrades of existing Jarraptha ships. The delivery of those upgraded ships kept getting delayed, and while the humans always had good reasons for the delays, the fact was the Jarraptha had received little in return for providing warships, fabricators, and a mountain of spare parts. With a clear head, did he still agree with the Maxulks that the power of humans had to be checked before it grew out of control? The real question was, could he disagree? The awful truth was the two senior species had maintained a balance of power in the galaxy for eons. The cost of that balance was an endless war. The benefit of the balance was that few intelligent species had gone extinct as a result of the war. In the coalition ruled with an iron fist by the Maxulk's hegemony, societies and cultures had been perverted to better serve the needs of their masters. But that was not true of the Rindaloo coalition. The Rindaloo were lazy and neglectful, but mostly benign overlords. They cared little about how their clients structured their societies as long as the clients performed their assigned tasks in the war effort. Unlike the Maxulks, the Rindaloo actually had a code of conduct they expected their clients to abide by, and not only in military actions. Client societies were strongly encouraged to protect individual rights to an extent that would be considered shockingly decadent in the enemy coalition. Under the largely absentee leadership of the Rindaloo, the Jarraptha had flourished. Would that happy situation continue if humans became the sole superpower in the galaxy? That, he decided, was a question for people far above his pay grade. And maybe he was too biased to make a rational judgment about the situation. If successful, the operation would be the greatest action in the long and legendary history of the Ethics and Compliance Office. That was important in many ways, not the least of which was morale of ECO's staff. There were many drawbacks to working for the clandestine office, the worst of which were the restrictions on wagering. ECO officers had access to juicy insider information and were not allowed to place bets on operations where they could influence the outcome, which would be fair if not for the overly broad criteria the Inquisitors used to define influence. Generally, if anyone in ECO was involved in an action, no one associated with the office could wager on the outcome, not even in a peripheral way. Unfortunately, each year, many honest ethics officers got in trouble for wagering on issues that ECO was involved in, even when those officers had no knowledge because the information was restricted. The harsh restrictions on wagering created the greatest barriers to ECO recruiting and retention efforts. At least that is what outsiders thought. In reality, the Ethics and Compliance Office actually did not want people who considered gambling to be their greatest passion, because while Ottavio Scarandum was not allowed to wager on some of the juiciest action, he had something better. Being in the action. Nothing was juicier than that. When an operation was coming together and the mark was falling for a con, Scarandum felt sorry for those who could only wager on the actions of others. Would he have preferred to wager on whether the Bosphorok task force would retreat from Funandeng without a shot being fired, or to actually make it happen? Please. The decision was easy. After staring at the ceiling of his office while he ran scenarios in his head, he reached another decision. Yes, the opportunity offered by the Maxalts was exactly the sort of thing ECO was supposed to handle. It would give him the opportunity to become legendary. No action was juicier than that. Striding onto the escalated bridge, he found Kinsta huddled in conversation with the duty officer.
Sir!
Kinsta straightened up, his antennas drooping and twitching, unable to hide his guilt about sharing gossip.
At ease, Lieutenant. Commander Mara, he addressed the duty officer. We have been idle for too long. Set a course for Home Fleet headquarters and engage when ready.
Mara attended to her duty with a mere nod of her head, but Kinsta could not resist asking the question that was on everyone's minds.
Is this because of the Maxalts, Captain?
Yes.
Scarandum took a deep breath for dramatic effect.
They gave me a warning, he told the bridge crew, knowing the news would spread around and eventually beyond the ship.
What he said was technically true, which of course was the best type of truth. The Maxalts had given him a warning. They had also offered a solution, but the crew didn't need to know about that.